Part 4, Chapter 11, in which a mirror is broken and the author explains himself. Quote, of ownership. As if one fit to own things, would not that pleasure enter upon all and incorporate them into himself or herself? Walt Whitman, poem called Thoughts.
What was that? Said Harvey. What was what? Said Mahogany.
That noise. It sounded like plagiarism to my ears.
Oh, that was just the author explaining his philosophy of writing.
Back on the bridge, they passed a small arcade, and R.T. motioned for them to enter. A few years before, it had been the most lucrative jewelry store in all of Florence, but the owner had discovered he could make twice as much money with video games.
Look at this, said R.T., directing the group to a game called The Adventures of Captain Harvey.
We're in video? Said Idothea with surprise.
Virtual reality, said R.T.
Hey, said Mahogany, seeing a reflection of himself. There I am. R.T. fed some bills into the machine, and the adventure began. The game was a hypertext of forking paths, arranged so that it was a different game each time a player ran through it. Even if the player made the same choices in the same order, it was still different, for the person, learning from the first time through, was a different player. It began with Harvey in the sanitarium in Leucadia, and Mahogany paused for a moment to consider the best path to escape. First he tried to get Harvey through the door, but Harvey was killed by the waiting nurse. Then he had the captain attack the nurse with a pillow, but that failed too.
For God's sakes, yelled Harvey, that's twice you've destroyed the universe. Why don't you build a fire and leap out the window?
Mahogany did as he was told, and the journey began.
Wow, he said, this is better than real life.
That's the idea, said R.T. Mahogany had destroyed the universe a few more times before R.T. realized that if Mahogany continued to play, he would eventually reach the moment when he began to play this video game, and within that video game, he would begin to play this video game, ad infinitum. Realizing he was in danger of watching Mahogany play the video game for the rest of eternity, R.T. pulled him away and led the group to the station. In 30 minutes, they arrived in Monte Catini.
R.D. told me to meet him at the baths, said R.T.
The baths? Said Mahogany.
Monte Catini Terme, said R.T.,
the most famous thermal springs in all of Italy. R.D. is in cahoots with the proprietor. When they reached the springs, R.D. was waiting in the lobby. He suggested they take advantage of the facilities before lunch, and had the manager set up an individual room for each of them. Harvey was the first to go in. The room was small, 8 feet by 8 feet square, with a large brick tub, 2 feet 6 inches deep, built against the north wall. There were 3 clothes hooks and a shelf, and a wooden stool next to the door. Spring water poured into the tub from the faucet in the northeast corner. The bricks and tiles above the mineral-rich water were white with lime and sulfur, and there were 2 plastic bowls to be used for dousing floating in the pool. One was pink, 12 inches in diameter. The other, larger, was green. In the bottom of the pink bowl was a circular pattern of red, white, and yellow roses. In the bottom of the green bowl was a pattern of yellow daisies. Harvey latched the wooden door, undressed, and slipped into the bath. Instantly, the heat and minerals overcame him. He sat at the lowest level, leaning against the west wall, watching the water pour from the spout on the east wall. He sat, pushed a plastic bowl toward the spigot, pushed another. He sat, pushed a plastic bowl toward the spigot, pushed another. He sat. He noticed the bowls returned to the southwest corner where the overflow water escaped through a depression in the open side. He sat, pushed a bowl toward the spigot, The water in the bowl lurched forward and carried it quickly to the faucet. The stream of water caught its front lip and spun it clockwise, sending it circling back, flowers spinning, to the southwest corner where Harvey sat. The bowls continued their paths. Pink, green, pink, green, pink, green. And the spinning motion separated the sulfur from the water and left small granules inside the bowl's ring of flowers. The sound of the water was constant, and the bowls moved evenly, regularly. Every step Harvey had taken had led him to this circling of currents. Every place he had ever seen, every person he had ever been, had led him here. He remembered all the baths he had taken in the course of his travels, the one in Verona when he dreamt of Julia Hathaway, the one in the ruins of Caracalla, the one in the Hotel de la Mer before his farewell to Sisyphus, the one in the treehouse lounge before the all-night party, and the one in Rome under the care of Elio Pascoli. Somehow, they seemed to tell a story of their own, giving his life a comforting continuity, tying together the different times and places with their wet pockets of peace, temporary returns to the womb in which Harvey could be healed and reborn. He considered that his entire story was superfluous and might have been more pleasingly expressed with the simple enumeration of his baths. After lunch, R.D. proposed they go into Florence, and he led the group back to the station. As soon as they approached the platform, he spotted their train, and, ignoring the signs that warned him about the danger of doing so, R.D. walked directly across the tracks. He was halfway to the other side when he tripped on a tie and hit his head on the rails. The group stared in horror as an oncoming locomotive crept over his torso and sliced him in two.
"È vietato attraversare i binari," cried Harvey. "È severamente vietato. Non sai leggere, stronzo."
Footnote. Harvey on the airplane cries out,
"It is forbidden to walk across the tracks. It is severely forbidden. Can't you read, shithead?"
R.T. rushed to his aid, but by the time he pulled him from the bloody wheels, R.D. was no longer breathing. A crowd gathered to look at the gruesome spectacle, and when the paramedics took the cadaver away, Harvey and the others returned to Florence.
"I guess you'll have to write our sequel," said Mahogany, turning to R.T.
"Part 5? I suppose so," said R.T. "Maybe I can get some help this time."
"From who?" said Idothea.
"From Laura Antipas," he said, "the actress from Mantua."
"I remember Laura," said Mahogany. "Harvey and I left her on the island of Sante."
"Yes," said R.T., "and she called me the day that you left. She had kept the copy of Part 2, which I sent to you and Harvey, and she thought the picture I had painted was unjust. She protested she was not nearly so heartless as she had been portrayed, and she sent me a rewrite of the chapter she had done herself. Needless to say, I was astonished by her audacity. But when the chapter arrived, I read it, and, to my surprise, I had to agree her version was superior to my own. But, by that time, Part 2 had already been printed, and there was no way to replace my chapter with hers. I wrote and explained what had happened, and told her how much I liked her rewrite, and how sorry I was I could not suppress my own blasphemous pages. Then I asked her if, as a gesture of peace, I might be permitted to see her at her villa on Sante. 2 months passed, and I received no reply, but I went anyway, not knowing if I would even be able to speak to her. Again, to my surprise, she did entertain me, and with such a sweetness of character as to make me feel ashamed I had ever drawn my pen to speak against her. I found lodgings in a small hotel near her villa, and on the second night of my stay, she invited me to a party with her friends. Again I was mortified at the words I had written, for her acquaintances were not the egotistical socialites I had portrayed in my novel, but rather genuine, caring human beings. The morning after the party, she invited me to breakfast, and she explained she was not bitter at what had transpired, for she was looking for a man who was more than just a reflection of herself. By the time I left, I could not stop thinking about her, and when I returned home, I began to compose a poem.
"A poem?" said Idothea. "What's it called?"
"I've entitled it the Rolando Furioso," said R.T., "but it is not yet finished, for it is beyond my skill as a writer, and so it was that you found me on the banks of the Arno."
"You know," said Mahogany, "I've always had questions about our story."
"Questions?" said R.T. "Take the name of the novel, The Adventures of Captain Harvey. I mean, couldn't you find a better title?"
"Laura asked me the same question," said R.T., "but my fondness for the word adventure is of an etymological nature."
"Etymological?" said Mahogany.
"The history of the word," said R.T.
"Oh," said Mahogany, "I thought you said etymological."
"The word adventure," said R.T., "incorporates a variety of meanings which are essential to the tale. First, there is the Latin adventare, which means to approach or come near. And then there is the Spanish aventura, which means adventure, chance, or affair. Aventuroso, meaning risky, and ventura, meaning lucky or happy. In Italian, avventura suggests the varied meanings of adventure, experience, chance, and risk, while ventura denotes luck, fortune, destiny, and fate, and venturo means forthcoming or future. The Adventures of Captain Harvey, then, is a story about experience, fortune, risk, luck, chance, and destiny. And the word adventure, like the protagonist himself, is at once one thing and many."
"I see," said Mahogany. "But why do you always write about Italy?" said Idothea.
"Ah, Italy," said R.T., "because Italy offers a light that is at once ancient and new."
"A light you killed when you killed Adelphine," said Mahogany.
"Yes," said R.T., "it was tragic for me, too, and when I finished drafting the scene, I got up and stood in the middle of my study and began to weep. It was as if I had seen the death of my own child."
[Footnote: Giacomo Puccini expressed the same thoughts upon completing his opera, La Bohème. When they reached Florence, R.T. excused himself to return to his washing, but before he did, he invited his progeny to join him that night for dinner.
"Meet me at the Ristorante Assa at 9 o'clock near the Piazza San Lorenzo, and I'll compose one of the most pleasant dinners you've ever had."
On their way back to the pension, Harvey was caught in a group of tourists and separated from the others. They were college students from the United States on their first trip abroad, and they were complaining because the experience they had envisioned had never materialized. It had been a shock to have to survive a day without a hot shower or sleep in a room with the bathroom down the hall, and they had been utterly unprepared for the constant assault on their senses of so much geographical motion and so many accumulating impressions. "This is what truly exhausts sightseeing travelers," thought Harvey. "Not the hour upon hour of steps on the stone, but the parade of personalities that passes through them in a day, faces and reflections they do or do not want to claim as their own." When they passed a stone pillar, the captain reached out and pulled himself free of the group. Almost immediately, he was swept up in another group of tourists, then another, and another, and another. "So this is what remains," thought Harvey, "of the Florence I knew in the past, this car-infested inferno in which everything, air, water, earth, has been spoiled. This is what they've done to the city of Dante, Michelangelo, and Da Vinci.
Hoping to find relief from the hordes, the captain stepped into the Duomo, but it was swarming as well, filled with guides and vendors, selling every kind of card and trinket imaginable. He was jostled among them until he came to rest before a statue of Jesus Christ.
"Arrgh!" he wailed, and his roar lifted from the marble of the floor and echoed from wall to wall, growing to a deafening crescendo as it crashed against the Brunelleschi dome. Screaming threats in Latin, Harvey charged after the vendors, toppling their carts and stands and smashing their trinkets, until the temple was clear and Harvey fell to his knees and buried his face in his hands. A few minutes later, he was roused by the sound of a divine voice.